Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to learn about new evidence of mind-body connections. How virgin coconut oil is more effective than drugs in combating stress and depression. For those of you who are still not paying attention to biphenyl A, you should. It's 100 times more harmful than previously imagined, and it's in a lot of stuff, especially if you microwave. Glutathione is the master antioxidant. Learn more about it. We're also going to talk today about how a new law will block our scientists from giving anti-GMO information. We have commentaries. Chris Hedges, Society of Captives, Truth Dig. Graham Hancock, The War on Consciousness, from Wake Up World. The latest on the environment, including something that I hope we would never discuss, but it's here, and it's about the early warning signals of abrupt climate change. This is the University of Exeter, published by Science Daily. Do you remember, it was about 6 years ago, I said one of the 12 tipping points was when the temperature in the Atlantic changes, and that changes the conveyor belt, the loop that goes from the south, taking warm water north and bringing that cool water back. If that should abruptly change, it could put most of Europe and Ireland, Scotland, England into a terrible position, similar to like a new ice age. Well, I'll give you the latest on that. Warmer Pacific Ocean could release millions of tons of seafloor methane from the University of Washington. I'll give you the latest on that. And that's in light of the fact that there's another one of these completely meaningless conferences occurring down in Peru where everyone's going hoopla, hoopla. Let me tell you something. These may feel good to the people who attend them. They may be a basis for people saying, gee whiz, we've got to do something. But the reality is no government, major government, meaning China, India, Brazil, the United States, the major polluters of the world, are going to do anything in the short term that'll be meaningful. They'll make promises, but then nothing will happen because of the corporatization of the policymaking in all these countries. So we'll tell you the facts. There's going to be a smackdown. A lot of people are going to suffer. And then we have to ask, at what point does intentional ignorance have to be justified? I don't believe it should be any longer. I believe we should all look at the truth of what's happening in our environment, because the environment doesn't bluff. It's not going to wait for us. It's not going to wait for the right populist, caring, nurturing, conscientious politicians to make the right choices. We are going to get devastated in the very near future. I'm talking within the next 2 to 3 years, we'll start saying this, and then it's just going to escalate. So by them saying at these conferences, well, within the next 30 years, all within the next 20 years, we don't have 20 or 30 years. We're running out of time. We're out of time. And yet they continue with these dog and pony shows like they're meaningful. They are not. More on that later in the show. Let's begin. We're doing a support group right now on the brain. We're only 6 weeks in, and already, according to the feedback on Sunday evening, the people are manifesting some remarkable improvements. Those that have been manic, depressed, anxious, are feeling so much better. They're able to go through a day feeling joy and happiness. They're feeling grounded. Those who had no energy are bursting with energy. Those who couldn't sleep through the night are doing so with an ease. Those who were losing their memory, those who family members are suffering from dementia, that's all changing. So that's just in the first 6 weeks. We still have another six weeks to go, so I'm very conscious that we're going to see some remarkable changes. But behind all of that was the idea that you must be able to separate out that which stresses us, that which causes us to make bad choices, from that which impels us to make good choices. That's the body-mind connection, and that's what we're working on. There are probably 3,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing you that what you think and your attitude and behavior directly manifest a biochemical reaction instantaneously, as if you flip a switch and 100 trillion cells respond exactly. So what if you flip the wrong switch? What if you have the wrong ideas? What if you believe in the wrong things? What if your perception of your reality is distorted? What if you're just an extension of a highly conditioned populace? Then you're not going to like the outcome. This is from Women's Health Weekly. Quote, this is a, for the first time, researchers have shown that practicing mindfulness meditation or being involved in a support group has a positive physical impact at the cellular level in breast cancer survivals. A group working out of Alberta Health Sciences Services and University of Calgary Department of Oncology has demonstrated that telomeres, protein complex at the end of chromosomes, maintain their length in breast cancer survivors who practice meditation or are involved in support groups, while they shorten in a comparison group without any intervention. Now, in lay language, what they're saying is what we have been showing for a long time. In supportive environments, hence the idea of a support group, you're able to see other people change. You're able to be motivated by the change of the group and individually. You also have a feedback loop with other people. And so we need more support groups in America. We need support communities. Now, you would think that a gated community is a supportive community. It is not. To the contrary, these are people who have common interests. They like golf, for example, or tennis. They want to be in a protected environment. They want to have all their conveniences available when they step out the door. And that has been a thriving environment for them for the last 40 years. Now it's changing because the places people want to be in these gated communities are running out of water. And at least in the Southwest, in the South, like in Georgia, South Carolina, most of Florida, California, except for Northern California, all of your southwestern states are in severe drought and mega drought. It's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. Within the next 3 years, we will see at least 5,000. Let me repeat this so we're clear on this. We will have no less than 5,000 towns, cities, and communities in the United States either out of water completely, not a drop to be had, everything bust in, trucked in, or they will be having to create multi-billion-dollar water pipelines from existing reservoirs, which will deplete those reservoirs and hence cause additional drought to where people need the water. They'll be either short or out. So, all the people listening now, if you have a golf course that uses more water than any other form of a lawn care in the United States, so there's not going to be a supportive environment. Besides, you can have people who don't really communicate with their neighbors much in these environments. They just share a common environment. What I'm talking about is sharing a common environment with common ideals and common needs that should be addressed. The support community of the future, I predict there are going to be thousands of these everywhere. And it'll be a combination of those who are older and wiser, our senior citizens, our elders, finally being recognized for the asset they are, the gift they are, and being able to counsel and direct and guide those who are younger and need that direction. So that's the next major paradigm shift. It's already happening. But this study shows that when women were in a support group, their telomeres, which I speak about all the time on this show, lengthened. That meant that their lifespan is, they have a longer lifespan, and their DNA is turned on in the healing modality rather than stressed, loneliness, isolation, anger, depression, and frustration, which turns the DNA off and keeps you in a chronic state of distress. And that shortens your telomeres and speeds up your death process. So, nice study, very positive, and that should give hope for a lot of people. Don't suffer in silence. We have to start networking as a society. We have to recognize that we are a very lonely society. And that's where the support systems come in. Good news about virgin coconut olive oil. There's a lot of good news on olive oil round. This was published in Experimental and Therapeutic Medicine, and it showed that it can be more effective than drugs in combating stress and depression. And that is terrific. The article was entitled Anti-Stress and Antioxidant Effects of Virgin Coconut Oil in Vivo. And the researcher performed several stress tests on groups of mice, control groups including untreated mice, mice not subjected to stress, and virgin olive oil was compared to a commonly prescribed psychiatric drug, diazepam. Their results were extremely impressive and suggest that using a high-quality virgin coconut oil can rival antidepressant drugs without any of the dangerous side effects. The researchers attributed the success in treating the depression to a unique mixture of medium-chain fatty acids found in coconut oil, rich in saturated fats, and to the antioxidants present in higher-grade, less processed virgin coconut oils. So that's important, especially when you realize the complete failure of all of psychiatry at the pharmaceutical level of trying to rebalance the mythical brain chemical imbalance, which does not exist and has never been proven in a single study ever. So, would you rather take one of their psychiatric drugs and have suicidal ideation or commit suicide or attempt suicide or akathisia, the inability to sit still, and then be given another drug for that, or have extra virgin, organic, unprocessed coconut oil, and then under the guidance of your healthcare practitioner, watch the outcome. And by the way, in our health support group, everyone is using once a day 1 tablespoon of extra virgin organic coconut oil, among everything else, but that's just one thing. Now, I'm against microwaving for many reasons, not the least of which is the magnetic pulse that comes from it, but I'm also against the high heat concentration that will destroy antioxidants in the food that's being cooked and also creates free radicals in the food that's being cooked. There are other reasons as well. But a lot of times people don't realize that when they're using hot plastic containers, that when heat comes into contact with plastic, it frequently allows the plastic, the polymers, to be released into the liquid. That is unhealthy. And a lot of this is in the form of biphenyl A. Now their latest research is presented by Green Med Info and Sarah G. Quote, a new study reveals just how profoundly misled we are about biphenyl A and its analogs. They're at least 100 times more toxic than we previously imagined. An alarming new study establishes that the commonly used chemical biphenyl, used in tens of thousands of consumer products and is lesser known but increasingly prevalent analogs like biphenyl S and biphenyl F, are several orders of magnitude more disruptive to the endocrine system of the developing male human fetus than previously shown by toxicological data. The new study was published in the journal Fertility and Sterility. It's entitled A New Chapter in the Biphenyl A Story. Biphenyl S and biphenyl F are not safe alternatives to this compound. Now, as I've discussed many times, stay away from all these containers. use natural materials that don't contain these at all. That's one way. And also, some of the things that we can do to rebalance our biochemistry, especially men and women who are not familiar with how powerful the endocrine disrupting is and how it impacts negatively testosterone secretions. Genistein. Now, genistein is very good for you. Geni, G-E-N-I, steen, S-T-E-I-N. It's a photocompound. It's found in physiologically significant concentrations in organic soy, red clover, and the green organic coffee bean. Not coffee, but the green coffee bean. Now, it's capable of reducing the adverse effects of biphenyl A exposure. Alpha-lipoic acid. Lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C. Now, at 600 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams, it can mitigate biphenyl A-induced testicular toxicity. The probiotics are very good, and folic acid, which is terrific, also can prevent the adverse effects of biphenyl A. Black tea is good against biphenyl A, and kimchi, by probiotics, are very good, especially from the fermented cabbage that degrades biphenyl A so it doesn't end up hurting you, and royal jelly. Now, royal jelly is produced by worker bees for the queen, and it is a phenomenal elixir. It's been found to inhibit the estrogenic and proliferative, potentially cancer-promoting effects of biphenyl A. So we do have some things we can do in the positive sense to detoxify, and we should detoxify. I'm Gary Knoll. That's our Health and Nutrition. Now, I want to share a couple things on the environment. Both of these are from mainstream scientific organizations, University of Washington University and University of Exeter. First, the warming of the Pacific Ocean. This is in Science Daily. Quote, off the west coast of the United States, methane gas is trapped in frozen layers below the seafloor. New research from the University of Washington shows that water at intermediate depths is warming enough to cause these carbon deposits to melt, releasing methane into the sediments and surrounding water. Researchers found that water off the coast of Washington is gradually warming at a depth of 500 meters, about a third of a mile down. That is the same depth where methane transforms from a solid to a gas. The research suggests that ocean warming could be triggering the release of a powerful greenhouse gas. From Geophysical Letters and Research, quote, we calculate that methane equivalent in volume to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill is released every year off the Washington coast. So, while all the politicians are playing games, that's all they know how to do, and all of the environmentalists are at these conferences without instead doing the right thing is stop going to these conferences. They're meaningless. They've always been meaningless. Instead, have massive general strikes. You want to get someone's attention? Close a hospital. Close the city's transportation system. Go on strike. Then you get their attention. Then you bargain. Then you say what you want. And if they don't do it, you keep it closed down. Too radical? Compared to what? To the discomfort of being in a police line? To the discomfort of facing the enemy, which is the establishment, which is the government? What exactly are you comparing the discomfort to? Waking up one day and realizing that all the while that everyone was talking about what you should do, you chose not to by intentional neglect, and now you are living in a parched desert. You have no lawns, you have no water. Or how about living in Europe and realizing one day when you wake up, the temperatures drop 12 degrees. Could it happen? Yes. And that's because we didn't pay attention to what all that warming was. We thought it would come a different day, a different lifetime. It's here, it's now, and it's causing extremes. So I believe that the only way we can do it is stop trusting any of our politicians because they've been compromised in the extreme, including Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. Sorry for the corporate liberals, but those two don't begin to have 1% the integrity of a Dennis Kucinich, a Ralph Nader, Jill Stein, or any truly independent thinking person cares about the populace. So what else is coming at us? And this is coming, and if this happens, it's a game changer for all of Europe. Quote from Science Daily, University of Exeter. A new study by researchers at the University of Exeter has found early warning signals of a reorganization of the Atlantic Ocean circulation, which could have a profound impact on the global climate system. The research published today in the journal Nature Communications used a simulation from a highly complex model to analyze the Atlantic overturning circulation, an important component of the Earth's climate system. It showed that early warning signals are present up to 250 years before it collapses, suggesting that scientists could monitor the real-world overturning circulation for the same signals. This is like a conveyor belt in the ocean, driven by the salinity and temperature of the water. The system transports heat energy from the tropics and southern hemisphere to the North Atlantic, where it is transferred to the atmosphere. Experiments suggest that this, if it is switched off by extra fresh water entering the North Atlantic, surface air temperature in the North Atlantic region would cool by 1 to 3 degrees centigrade, which with enhanced cooling of up to 8 degrees centigrade in the worst affected regions. The collapse would also encourage the drought in one area, just south of the Sahara Desert, and dynamic changes in sea levels off the coast of Eastern Europe and North America. Quote, we found that natural fluctuations in circulation were getting long-lived as the collapse was approaching, a phenomenon known as the critical slowing down. We don't know how close we are to a collapse of the circulation, but a real-world early warning could help us prevent it, or at least prepare for the consequences. The study is the most realistic simulation of the climate system in which this type of early warning signal has been tested. So, now by the time they warn you, understand how many degrees of separation it is in there being caution, conservative, not wanting to panic anyone, versus the reality. Let me take you back about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when we were talking about the 12 tipping points. Now there are 32 tipping points, but then it was 12, and we were talking about how three had already tipped, so nothing we're going to do is going to change it. And the rest we could interfere with and slow it down. And one of them was about the breaking off of these ice islands on Antarctica. And the largest one that was being studied at the time was the Larsen B. And all the science at the time said it would be between 100 to 129 years before it broke off. It broke off 11 days later. So much for the experts. Time and again, they are now showing they were wrong, but substantially wrong. So why should we assume that all the predictions mean that we will have water into the future? We're out of water now, in many cases. That we will have extreme hurricanes in the future, extreme typhoons. We had the worst typhoon in recorded history this year. That we would have the extreme of a vortex coming south. We had it last year, and we're going to have it again this year. So we have this disconnect between scientists showing us what is happening and our willingness to accept it. It's as if we're in a cognitive dissonant place where we just don't want to accept the reality because it would cause us to feel uncomfortable and we'd have to change. All I'm doing is bearing witness to the fact that we have a lot that we could do that we're not, because we're not willing to become uncomfortable, to risk anything. And as a result, until we do more than have these conferences, nothing will change. Nothing will change. Because I've been watching every one of these conferences. I look at all the information that was made public at these conferences. They make promises and then kick it down the road. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break, come back, and go into how fancy labels fool us, the neuroscience behind bias. Then commentaries, And then, time permitting, predatory lending. Want to talk about that? Just want to mention, however, that this evening at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour will be Crimes of Big Business and Government, Corruption of the Free Trade Through Globalization and the New Pacific and Atlantic Partnership Agreements. The Trans-Pacific Atlantic Partnership Agreements have been called NAFTA on steroids, and unlike any other trade agreements in the past, these were being conducted under strict secrecy behind closed doors, even from Congress. What is their agenda? Why should you be concerned about what they're doing? They've been doing this since the Clinton administration. I'll be having Adam Wiseman, founder of Trade Justice and the National Anti-Free Trade Activist, and Lacey Comus, head of the International Activities for the Global Trade, a public citizen, and also a person from the International Forum on Globalization, Jerry Mander's organization. It will be a powerful program, and like all of our Progressive Commentary Hours, serious issues, people who are not compromised by affiliation, telling the truth. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I want to mention that a lot of people showed up last night to watch Poverty Inc., the new feature film, and Professor Richard Wolff was there and gave a wonderful, insightful lecture, and we really appreciate him showing up. We've been having different people from the film show up each night, and hopefully you, if you haven't seen it, you'll call. It's a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. There are showings, five a day for the next 3 days. Now, I'll be there next on Thursday, closing night. So your opportunity to see who's behind all the power plays in the world. How do we get to where we're at? What responsibility do we have to take back the power that we have given them and they have taken from us? Every part of this puzzle is discussed. Poverty Inc. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. If you do, you'll get a book and two copies of the film, or you can just show up at the Quad Theater at 7:15, 5 o'clock, 9:30, and you can get a ticket at the box office. You don't get the book, but you get the movie. 877-627-5065. I'm also going to be this Sunday on Long Island at noon for one showing of Poverty Inc. at the Cinema Arts Center. If you'd like to get your ticket and be there, I'll be there for discussion afterwards. The number to call is 631-423-7610. 631-423-7610. That's this coming Sunday at noon at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, Long Island. This is from Psychology Today. Jordan Gaines Lewis. I thought it was interesting. The holiday season is here, and that means it's time for gift buying. With each passing season, finding the perfect gift for loved ones seems to become more and more difficult, a phenomenon not unrelated to the seemingly exponential growth in buying options each year. So, how do we do it? Many of us would like to believe that our decision-making is based on logic and objectivity. Studies have shown, however, that our preferences are not always based on inherent qualities, but rather on highly biased expectations. For decades, psychological research has supported the presence of inherent bias in human perception. A study entitled The Color of Odors examined the effect of color on odor and taste perception of wines. In the experiment, wine experts were presented with two glasses of wine, one red, one white. Each was asked to describe the wine as they experienced it. The experts used words like citrus, flower, lemon, and honey to describe the white wine, whereas they used the words clove, musk, and crushed red fruit to describe the red. However, all the experts had been unwittingly duped. Both glasses actually contained the same white wine. The only difference between them, a little non-flavored red food coloring. Not a single expert was able to identify that both glasses contained white wine, and they all described a white wine as they would have a red. This classic study reveals the power that expectations have on how we perceive the world. And though psychological studies have revealed a lot about the underlying motives of human judgment, they rarely touch on the neuroscience behind this phenomena. A study out of Caltech, however, began to shed light on how perceived notions and labels influence our thinking. As an aside, 93% of all incumbents were reelected at high margins, and yet 9% favorable ratings of legislators. Do you see the cognitive disconnect? This could help explain that. In this study, subjects were placed in a functional magnetic resonance imager and presented with two glasses of wine, one labeled $5 and the second labeled $90. However, the subjects were not told that the wine in each glass was actually the same $90 wine. They found that the average self-reported experienced pleasantness score was greater for the $90 wine as compared to the $5 wine. More importantly, the higher the score corresponded to the increased blood oxygen level dependent signal in the medial prefrontal cortex of the brain, meaning that this area was more active when tasting a wine labeled as more expensive. The frontal lobe of the cortex is an area of the brain important for high-level cognitive functioning and top-down processing. It has been shown to be essential for decision-making and planning for future events and reward comparison. Now, this study revealed that it's not just the wine per se, but are being told whether it's a better wine, a more expensive wine. And hence, the outcome of a reward comparison is revealed, meaning if there's something we're working towards, if there's a higher value associated with something we've been given, then we have better appreciation for it rather than something that's less so and inexpensive. So what is the takeaway message of this? Think of the people who go before us in television wanting to be our elected leaders and trying to convince us of how bright they are, of how they're going to solve our problems. Now, we want our problems solved, but then who is to do it? We don't assume for a moment that we're capable of doing it. It's too complex, too many pieces to put together, too much thinking. So we let people sell us on how they're the brand we should buy. Isn't it amazing when a person says that I'm for the people and I raised $2 billion to run and be elected for president, we associate then that if he got $2 billion, he must be worth more than the person that didn't get so much money. But who gave him $2 billion? It was Wall Street, corporate America. But that's not what we think about. If someone walks into a place and said, I've got a $100,000 Rolex watch, we go, ooh. If they say, I've got a $5 knockoff, we go, wow, who cares? And what if they were both the same watch, either the Rolex or the $5 watch? We don't look deep enough. We don't ask enough questions. We do not probe further than our expectations. we're too easily convinced that something is what we need. And hence we go through this dissonant period and we accept it. And then later we find out we've got buyer's remorse. We accepted the wrong information, the wrong product. It's just something to think about, how easy we are to be duped. The war that we're facing also, that I believe we should not be in, is the war on drugs. I believe, and as I said yesterday, that I believe every single person who has been arrested for possession or using or selling drugs should be given a clean slate and allowed to reenter society. We should have therapies to help people, but a person shouldn't be punished. That's not therapy. That's not going to make them a better person or better able to relate to other people in a society. And we're not talking about a few thousand or a few hundred thousand or even a few million. At this point, we're looking at over 7 million people. Now, we're told that the war on drugs is being waged on our behalf by our government and their armed bureaucracies and police forces to save us from ourselves. They say that, well, the potential for abuse and harm are supposed to be the criteria by which the use of drugs is suppressed. The greater a drug's potential for abuse and harm, the greater and more vigorous the degree of suppression and the more draconian the penalties applied against its users. Now, in line with this scheme, drugs are typically ranked in a hierarchy. According to Graham Hancock, Wake Up World, you've got Schedule 1, 2, and 3 in the United States and Classes A, B, and C in the United Kingdom, and so on. All right. So generally, if a drug is deemed to have some currently acceptable medical use, that it is likely to be placed in a lower schedule than if it has none, notwithstanding the fact that it may have potential for abuse or harm. The notable exceptions in this system of ranking according to the perceived harms are, of course, alcohol and tobacco, both highly addictive and harmful drugs, far more so than cannabis or some of the others, but yet socially accepted on the grounds of long customary use and thus not placed in any schedule at all. So where did we go wrong? How did we end up with this failed war? Well, I believe that all of our wars, the war on cancer, the war on AIDS, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on terror, they're all failed wars and they're very self-serving. The people control the dialogue and control the process win hundreds of billions of dollars collectively. So when we look at the history of the war on drugs over approximately the last 40 years, it must be asked whether the criminalization of the use of any of the prohibited substances has in any way been effective in terms of the stated goals this war was supposed to have achieved. Specifically, has there been a marked reduction in the use of illegal drugs over the past 40 years? Even a Republican, I think, could understand that question. Now, it's either yes or no. As one would expect with billions of dollars of taxpayer money having been spent per year over such a long period of time, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, has there been a reduction in the harms that these drugs supposedly cause to the individual and to society? Simple question. It is unnecessary here to set down screeds of statistics and facts and figures readily available from published sources to assert that in terms of its own stated objectives, the war on drugs has been an abject failure and a shameful and scandalous waste of public money. Indeed, it is well known and not disputed that the very societies that attempt most vigorously to suppress various drugs and in which users are subject to the most stringent penalties have seen a vast and continuous increase in the per capita consumption of these drugs. This is tacitly admitted by the vast armed bureaucracies set up to persecute drug users in our society, which every year demand more and more public money to fund their suppressive activities. If the suppression were working, one would expect their budgets to go down, not up. But here is a big issue I have. Name me the bureaucracy that ever tries to serve the public only with public oversight and do no harm, and yet all of them do the same. They become self-serving, secretive, punitive, and like a massive overgrowth of cancer. Meanwhile, the social harms caused by the war on drugs itself are manifest and everywhere evident. In the United States, for example, there have been more than 20 million arrests for the possession of marijuana. Let me repeat that. 20 million people in the United States have been arrested for the use of marijuana. The pace of arrests is increasing year on year, bringing us to the astonishing situation where today a marijuana smoker is arrested every 38 seconds. The result is that marijuana arrests outnumber arrests for all violent crimes combined, meaning police are spending inordinate amounts of time chasing nonviolent criminals. And it goes without saying that those who are arrested for the use of marijuana and other illegal drugs do suffer immense harm as a result of the punishments inflicted on them, including, but not limited to, personal trauma, loss of freedom, rape, loss of reputation, loss of employment prospects, and serious, long-lasting financial and psychological damage. Such matters are only the beginning of a long inventory of harm caused by the war on drugs. The result is that people naturally seek out drugs and the temporary alterations in consciousness that they produce. Not all people in our society will do this, perhaps not even a majority, but certainly a very substantial minority. And instead of addressing what they're doing and why and what can be done in that process, instead we make it a crime because that's where the money flows and that's how it's controlled. For the hundreds of millions of people around the world who need to experience some form of altered states, it's not and cannot be satisfied by drunken oblivion or the stimulant effects of tobacco. It is therefore to their liking to turn to drugs, and since the war on drugs means that there is no legal source of supply of these substances, the inevitable result is that they want to get high, they're going to have to resort to illegal sources of supply. Herein lies great and enduring harm. For it is obvious, we have seen the effects everywhere that the criminalization of drugs has empowered and enriched a vast and terribly horrible global criminal underworld by guaranteeing that it is the only source of supply of these drugs. We have, in effect, delivered our youth, the sector within our societies that are most strongly experiencing altered states of consciousness with drugs, into the hands of the very worst on the planet, the demonic, the drug dealer, supplier, the organized criminal syndicates to buy drugs. Our sons and daughters have no choice but to approach and associate with violent and greedy criminals. And because the proceeds from illegal drug sales are so enormous, we are all caught in the inevitable consequences of turf wars and murders amongst the gangs and the cartels competing in this black market. It should be completely obvious to our governments, after more than 40 years of dismal failure to suppress illegal drug use, that their policies in this area do not work and will never work and never have worked, can't work. It should be completely obvious, a simple logical step, to realize that by decriminalizing drug use and making the supply of all drugs available to those adults who wish to use them through legal and properly regulated channels, we could at a stroke put all of the vast criminal enterprises that presently flourishes on the supply of illegal drugs out of business and the banks that laundered their money over the last 40 years. It ought to be obvious, but somehow it is not. Instead, the powers that we continue to pursue the same harsh and cruel policies that have been wedded to from the outset, ever seeking to strengthen and reinforce them rather than to replace them with something better. Indeed, the only change that the large armed bureaucracies that enforce these policies have ever sought since the war on drugs began, year on year, been to demand even more money, more arms, more draconian legislative powers to break into homes, to confiscate property, and to deprive others, including law-abiding citizens, of liberty and direct their lives. In the process, we have seen our once free and upstanding societies, which used to respect individual choice and freedom of conscience above all else, slide remorselessly down the slippery slope that leads to the police state. And all this is being done in our name, with our money by our own governments. To save us from ourselves? I think not. Who benefits from this colossal stupidity, this systematic wickedness? Well, all the corporate Democrats and liberals and conservatives and Republicans in Washington and state levels, and all the people like the wonderfully apocalyptic Bill O'Reilly. Bill, is there a prison big enough to satisfy your needs to put all the people who disagree with you into it? It's embarrassing. First, the large and ever-expanding armed bureaucracies, funded with large and ever-growing sums of public money to suppress the use of drugs, have benefited enormously. Did it ever occur to any of you that once you start a bureaucracy, you can't stop it? Did you ever actually look at what bureaucrats do each day and the technocrats that oversee it and the oligarchs that control all of it? Did you ever actually get out of your own political dynamic for a moment to look at the truth of what is separating your intent from your results? We have created a police state. They don't give a damn about anyone. You think in a sanctimonious, self-righteous manner that somehow because you're not using drugs or you're not committing a crime that you're safe from this government? Then you're delusional and you should use drugs, because you're no longer capable of having a rational conversation. Self-righteous indignation? Well, the moment someone's calling this program and tell me about how their God or their Jesus or their religious views prevent them or prescribe drugs, let me have the back end of that conversation back at your religion and what it has meant for human suffering or embetterment. But for now, I'm simply looking at the private contractors, these that are like parasites breeding in the bowels of Washington and the lobbyists by the thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands who know that once they have a powerful position, one of the thousand generals we have who are worthless, and all of the government officials, all of whom are worthless. If you eliminated every single person working in Washington, D.C., from the president, the Supreme Court, every member of Congress, every single agency, we would be far better off if we took on and did it ourselves. You could do no worse than the fools that we have put in power. Look at what they have achieved. Do not look at what they have promised. So, just take a look. And what do we have? These are the people that have created catastrophic failure on their part, laterally, generously, and creatively. Whether you're a Drug Enforcement Administrative agent or a prison guard, you naturally have a deeply vested interest in maintaining the miserable status quo justified by the war on drugs that keeps you on your job, that ensures your monthly paychecks continue to come, and that it continuously expands your budget. The second main category of beneficiaries, of course, the criminal gangs and cartels that want Republicans and Democrats, want Bill Clinton, want Barack Obama. They need these people in policy positions. Every organized crime dealer in the world is happy that we have the system we have, because with that system, they're insured of billions of dollars from the sale of illegal drugs, which they control. They wouldn't have earned a single penny if those were illegal. So who are the losers? First and most directly, those millions upon millions of good, nonviolent people in our societies who have been jailed or otherwise punished for the possession and use of drugs. And second, regardless of whether or not they use illegal drugs themselves, virtually everyone else in our societies as well. For the quality of life of all of us has been diminished by the growth of the police state and by the murderous activities of the criminal gangs enfranchised and kept in business, by the blind and mindless rule of our war on drugs. So in summary, the criminalization of drug use has brought no positive effects, only negative ones, and it has not stopped or even reduced the use of dangerous and harmful drugs. On the contrary, we have seen little that has saved people from themselves by this phony war, that the use of almost all illegal drugs, far from decreasing, has dramatically increased, and we haven't even learned a lesson from the tobacco or alcohol battles of the past. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Thank you.
Appropriate, those lyrics. I'm Gary Nall. Joining me in studio is Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to give you an update on the retreat, the upcoming retreat in January. Really excited to interview these people, nice people in the audience who are interested in coming down. We are filled in the first week, the second week, the 18th to the 24th. I have two openings. Two people had to drop out. So I'm still interviewing for that. And what I'd like to mention today is that we have opportunities for people that want to come down and kind of work with our staff. We call it work study. That means that you're helping out to keep the place clean and organized and orderly, helping with preparing the meals and things like that. So if people are interested in doing that, it's half the price. It's still going to be a magnificent experience. And so I'm still interviewing for those positions. We're just going to start to open those up.
Let me put this in perspective. First, this is a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI New York. And they are in a financial crisis. I spoke with Mario, the program director, today. We're doing all we can not to have a fundraiser this month because nobody wants it. So I offered something that will happen next week, which is a mini one day went on issues involving our police state. Okay. If that succeeds, then that keeps us from having to do a whole week. By doing a health support group, we might be able to pay the transmitter bill for the month. That's a big ticket that is crippling the station. The station is doing all that it can. And by the way, all the premiums have been picked up and delivered. Now they're all being shipped out, and we can thank all the volunteers. We can thank Mitchell Cohen and all the good people, Jen Dingman, who are there, about 40 volunteers, getting them out. But we needed something that would really, you know, bring in some money and yet be a phenomenal benefit to the audience. And so I agreed, after being asked, to do a retreat. If you saw my schedule, you would know why it's not easy for me.
I know your schedule.
But it's two whole weeks, starting the second Sunday of January. And here's what happens when someone comes. They learn how to de-stress. They learn how to decompress their anxieties, their frustrations. They learn how to cleanse with sprouts, like there's broccoli sprouts that help detoxify. There's juices, wheatgrass juice and ginger juice, a little shot of that three or four times a day. There's other juices. People can sometimes have 15 juices a day. There's gourmet meals, vegan meals, gluten-free meals, where they actually get to have cooking classes. There's raw food classes showing how to make raw food, including my daughter's strawberry cheesecake, which is gluten-free and vegan and raw. There's how to make these wonderful truffles, these chocolate desserts that are just spectacular. There's meditation classes. There's Mitchell Rabin's going to be doing Tai Chi and counseling. We have working out on power walking and biking, power biking and gym. And I do a two to 3 hour lecture each evening. There's personal counseling that you do. And we have other people who do different classes, growing, homesteading, hydroponics classes. Yeah, we have a whole hydroponics setup. So there's sprouting, homesteading, how to get off the grid, best places to live, communities around the world. All this is discussed. Plus, we eat in silence. There's times where there's place to go and just quietly meditate. It's a whole rejuvenation. If there's one way to get into the new year on a happy, positive, can-do, take back your life, honor your authentic self, this is it.
Plus, we have exercising, personal training with John Q.
Water aerobics, yes. There's a full day, and you can do as little or as much as you want, and we keep it very limited. Because if you get too many people, then not everybody gets personal attention. So we know the magic number. And we were booked from the first 5 minutes we mentioned this. But people find that somehow they can't come, and that's fine. And we have only two spaces left in the second week, none in the first week. But because we always wait till the end to offer work study, and the whole thing, minus their airfare to get down there, but the whole thing's only $2,000. That's it. This is like $6,000 to $8,000 anywhere else. And because I'm donating my time, you're donating your time to help the station. And so it's a big plus. And then the work study, it's only $1,000. And they do some work. They help out, like taking the food, you know, to the dining area and bringing it back and helping clean up. But they still have a chance to attend a lot of stuff. So if you want to be a part of it, either as a guest or as a work study, call Luann. Give your number, Luann.
Surely, it's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. If I'm not there, just leave a message, and I'll get back to everyone within 24 hours.
Good, and this is the only one we're doing, and hopefully it'll make a big difference and help the station. That's why we're doing it. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Don't forget tonight, 7 o'clock, powerful program. This you won't want to miss. Now, I'm going to take a few calls. If we have people would like to call in or talk back, our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to save the discussion, which is about 16 minutes, on predatory lending to college students and the solutions I believe we should do for tomorrow. And also, do you have any of the letters from listeners?
Well, I had a couple of people email me mentioning that 2 years ago on a couple of shows, you were very, very specific about the fact that you felt that people were going to start to protest, that there were going to be masses of people. And someone forwarded me an article about how they closed the L.A. freeway, one of the L.A. freeways last night, because people are starting to protest. They're using either Ferguson or the Michael Brown, anything out there that they can react to, they're reacting to. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. One of the listeners said exactly that. It seems that on the one hand, we're justifying violence, but on the other hand, people are organizing. They're getting together, and they're beginning to protest some of these police state type activities.
Understand that the media will focus upon the minor element of violence, like in Ferguson, but the people who were burning down the African-American shops in Ferguson were not the people who cared about the issue. These are people who will take advantage of anything, but the vast majority, the 99% of the peaceful people living in Ferguson who've been the victims of this discrimination, they were voicing their concerns in peaceful protest. But the media wants to make it look like everyone protesting is someone who is an anarchist or who is a bomb thrower, and it's not true. And it's just, they got the wrong side of it. Let's say hello to Rob from New York City. Hi, Rob.
What I wanted to ask you about is I've been getting emails about a bill that's coming up for a hearing tomorrow. It's called H.R. 4432, and it's supposed to be a bill to strip all states of the rights to pass GMO labeling laws. So it's some kind of federal law which is supposed to supplant the rights of individual states. Can you mention something about this, what this is all about?
Well, that's a law that they've been trying to get for some time, but I'm not aware that it is coming up. So I will look into this today, and there's no way that it could pass now because they don't control the Senate. Now, if they wanted to introduce this after the new Senate takes place, is seated in January, yes, then there's a high probability they'll be bringing it up, but we will be pushing back against that. And yes, federal law does supersede state law when it comes to labeling. So we're fully aware of that, and this is because the GMO people. But we'll be all over that issue when in a timely manner. Thanks for mentioning it, Rob. David from New York. Hi, David.
Hi, Gary?
Yes.
Hey, this is David. I used to work your retreats for you, and I just wanted to let you know that after so many of the retreats, people would come to me and say, David, this was the most important week of my life, because this is how they started their change. And it gave them a week to get into a routine. And it was, you know, years later, I just can't tell you, there must have been 20 or 30 people out of the, you know, couple hundred people that said to me, they couldn't live without this. This changed their life. I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, David. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today, we're finishing up yesterday's discussion about how police killings have become an industry.
Okay. We look forward to that. Are you hiding down there somewhere?
No, I'm not.
The police are monitoring your calls.
I expect to be up there shortly in the middle of the month.
Oh, great, great. More lectures?
Yes, actually, putting together the centenary celebration of Dr. John Henry Clark's birthday.
Excellent. We look forward to that. Utrice Lead coming to New York. We look forward to that. And right now, she's going to take on the issue she started yesterday.